Welcome to Embracing Continuous Behaviour Change for Anger Management, the podcast that helps you to calm your emotions and communicate effectively. I'm your host, Claire Broadley, the Anger Management Coach. In this podcast, I'll bring you expert interviews, inspiring stories, and practical advice on calming your emotions and living a more peaceful and fulfilling life. So sit back, relax, and get ready to master your emotions.
Okay, good morning and hello to all of our lovely listeners. I am Claire Broadley, your host, and with me this morning, I have got the Alice J. Lynham, who has the most beautiful smile, I have to say, Alex. You have the widest smile I have ever seen.
You. Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
So Alex is from Beyond the Binary. So Alex, can you tell us, introduce yourself, tell us a bit more about you.
Yeah, of course. I'm the founder of a company called Beyond the Binary. I am a trainer, consultant and public speaker, and I talk all things LGBTQIA plus inclusion. And I do this because of my own professional journey. So I worked for 10 plus years with young people and vulnerable adults. I was a designated safeguarding officer. I worked in the residential sector. And during that time, I was part of a management team. So I learned a lot about managerial styles and how we communicate and how we create beautiful organic cultures. But during that kind of part of my journey, let's say, I was dealing with a lot around my own gender identity and my own sense of self, where I had significant decline in mental health. I had substance addiction. I was in unhealthy relationships to the point where I was then able to kind of go on this journey of healing and recovery and really start to learn about myself and all that sort of beautiful stuff. And now I'm very much stand in the power of who I am as being trans non-binary. And I just open up this conversation, and I call it a conversation because it's a two-way thing. It's connection to human to human. And I very much empower people to get things wrong so they can get things right, without people feeling, like they're going to upset anybody, or without feeling like they can't ask questions, because I'm such a big advocate that every single human should just be unapologetically who they are, and they should just be allowed to just be their full authentic selves without that fear of judgment or that fear of, discrimination or upset. So, everybody can have a fulfilled life and everybody can be happy and everybody can be a joyful, and have a beautiful smile like mine. So that's a bit about me in a nutshell. I could tell you could be here all day.
I absolutely love that outlook of let's just be ourselves, because wouldn't that be amazing? That
you
don't have to worry about what anybody else thinks or says about us. We can just be, as you say, unapologetically ourselves. I'd love that.
This is where we land as human beings, because we forget about kindness sometimes, forget about compassion, we forget about love, and all human beings want love. Human beings want to be loved, and want that compassion and want to just be seen and want to be validated, and we lose that as human beings. And I think if we could just get out of our own way a little bit and lean into more conversations about human beings, about soulful human beings, I think this world would just be an incredible place to be. Not to say that it isn't now, but I think there is a lot of work that we need to do as a society, as a world, like globally, around how we just allow people to be themselves.
Yeah, we are, I think, often too interested in telling other people how they should live their own life.
Yeah.
That's not our position, is it?
No, not at all. But we do get ourselves wrapped up, and it's this construct that we have just been given. Like, for thousands of years, we've just been given this construct, this, you know, the patriarchy and, you know, hierarchy and all of these kind of what we would say are gender norms. Like, we've just been told that we have to live, you know, women should do this and men should do that. And everything is very binary. When actually, like, there is so much more colour and so much fluidity in a human being, you know, never mind what our gender identity is. What about the way that we dress? What about the way that we talk? What about, like, you know, our personality and the way that we just hold ourselves? What about that? You know, that's a big part of who we are, our identity.
Okay. So, from you starting this journey into your work in inclusivity, what has been your most memorable part in that journey so far?
Oh, that's such a big question. I think probably my most memorable, as it stands at the minute, is I did a keynote talk in March 2023. Yeah, just over 12 months ago at Manchester United Stadium. And it was in front of about 250 delegates. And I spoke about my journey. I spoke about authenticity. I spoke about, you know, just allowing people to be themselves. And I received a standing ovation. Wow. And from that conversation, there has been that has generated so much more, so many ripple effects. And that event that I stood on that stage with now, I am now part of their team. I am one of the inclusion consultants, where they are now releasing documentaries, which is being given over to Netflix, and I'm part of that. Like, I'm part of that work, and that is just an incredible achievement for me. For somebody that has really struggled, like, from a resilience perspective or from an emotional perspective, I have struggled to navigate my mental health because I felt isolated, or I felt shamed, or I felt, you know, I can't be visible, I can't be seen for who I am. And then now being able to witness my work being put into documentaries and being able to witness work going on where it's reaching, like, you know, thousands of people. And it's just, it's an incredible space to be, and look at that as such a great achievement for me. And, you know, in the last 2 years, 2.5 years that I've been running the business. So, yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. It's
and
good.
It does take, as they say, to run a business, turn up as your authentic self, don't they?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it sounds like you absolutely stood on that stage and turned up as your authentic self. And it does take that one person with the guts to kind of gulp down all that fear, like you said, and just stand there and be themselves and look at the difference that that has made.
Yeah.
Hats off to you.
Thank you.
So when you're trying to set up this inclusivity with businesses, what are some of the biggest challenges that businesses face when they're trying to create that inclusive culture?
I would say that it's the fear, like you just mentioned there about fear. Like, fear takes up about 60% of us as human beings, and like we get so consumed by fear. And that's with anything. But when we're talking about inclusivity, like, it's a big factor of getting it wrong. What about if we get called out on it? What about if it affects our reputation as a company? What about if we waste money and we don't get any return back from it? All of those things. And because there's so much fear around that, then we don't then take accountability for the things that we need to be doing. So I would be saying, like, when businesses are almost like teetering on the idea, it's that fear factor. And it's that fear factor of, am I going to make any money back from this? Because business is business, and we want to make money, essentially, to pay the bills. But so am I going to get a return back from my investment? Is this going to impact, like, my team dynamic and my brand reputation? Are people going to then call me out for doing things wrong? Are people then going to be watching me, you know, through a microscope and basically, like, judging everything that I'm doing? And again, it's also about this, well, I don't know what to expect on the other side. And it's this uncertainty of, well, once I step into this circle of inclusivity, I don't know what's going to be on the other side of it. I don't know how this is going to impact my business.
Oh.
And I could tell them, you know, and there is so many positives. Well, there are greater positives than what there are negatives for having an inclusive business and having an inclusive culture. But it's it's just this massive amount of fear of getting it wrong and feeling like once they get it wrong and they called out on it, like there's no coming back from it. When I've witnessed so many businesses get it wrong, like really stuff it up and then go, oh, okay, I now know what I don't need to do next time and I'll do something different. But it all comes down to this mindset of what are your intentions around inclusion? Do you want this to be a tick box exercise or do you want to have it like deeply rooted into your business in everything that you do?
Yeah.
And that's the difference. It can't be a tick box exercise. It has to be heart led. It has to be all coming from our hearts and, you know, and all that sort of stuff.
I was just going to say then, perhaps if they're doing it as a tick box exercise, that's where they're going to get it wrong, isn't it? Because there's no understanding there. There's no actual, as you said, heartfelt emotion going in there. They're literally just doing it to tick a box to get the, we are an inclusive employer.
Well, it looks attractive.
Yeah.
Right. It's from an outside perspective, like it looks attractive. When you see businesses being saying, you know, we have an inclusive environment and we have an inclusive board and we have a diverse like working force and all this sort of stuff, and it's like, oh my goodness, that looks attractive. That looks beautiful. But then when you actually step into it, it's like, oh, right, so you've done this for the outward look. You haven't done it because it's heart-led. And that's where people, that's where brand reputation is damaged. That's where you get higher staff turnover. That's where you start to lose money. It's not about inclusion losing you money. It's about doing it. It's about doing it with the wrong intentions. It's about doing it because it's a nice to have or it looks nice or it looks pretty and attractive.
Yeah.
You know, it's that's the difference.
And I guess that return on investment, as you've just mentioned, is that you're not constantly having to get new staff.
Yeah, yeah.
There's so many.
Yeah, and the profitability, like you're 35% more likely to be profitable in your business when you're visibly and actively inclusive.
Really?
And yeah, and you've got 71% of reinvestment coming from LGBT people. Like that is, those are big numbers. Like those are really big numbers. And that's just one marginalized community. Like what about other marginalized communities and minority groups? Like think about the impact that you could make simply by, and it's not, and some people as well, like get this overwhelm of, oh my goodness, there is so many things to think about. And, you know, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Yeah, there is. But it's about prioritizing it. And it's about what are your next logical steps? You know, where do you want to start on this journey? You know, what aligns to you right now? You know, I work with people who are business owners who are part of the LGBT community. And they're like, well, I align working with the LGBT community. Right, we'll focus on that then and then move on. Like, have your next logical steps mapped out. And it's the investment that you get back. Like, the once you start to, so like you invest in, say, training or you invest in awareness or you invest in, you know, sponsoring an event or networking somewhere or whatever that is specifically around marginalized communities and minority groups, you might invest, say, £1,000 and for you to go to that event. You then start to create and generate a community of people who will come and stick to you, who will come and stick to you like glue, right? And when what happens then is when they stick to you like glue, they reinvest time and time again. So therefore, you end up getting, say, three people that stick to you like glue and invest double what you've paid to be at that event.
Yeah.
Therefore, your profitability goes up. Therefore, you're seeing reinvestment, customer loyalty, satisfaction, all that sort of stuff. And that all just comes from just having it as part of your heart-led community. You know, has it, you know, heart-led approach. It makes such a big difference.
And I do think you can always tell the people who are heart-led.
Oh, massively.
Absolutely, you can. Because they've got big beans like you, Alex.
Yeah, you can tell. And, you know, people get picked out. Like, and it sounds awful when you just want to say it like this, but people can get picked out of a lineup and going, well, you're doing it for the wrong reasons. Because when you start to have conversations with people about it, they're like, well, I don't know about that, or I actually don't know what to do about that. And it's like, well, you're talking about doing it. Like, I talk when I do consultancy or I do training, I talk about active inclusion and visible inclusion. You can't do one without the other. Like, those two things have to be done together. Like, you can't say, like, you can't shout about saying that you're an inclusive business and then not actually do the bits and pieces underneath. Yeah. Or you can't do the bits and pieces and then not tell people that you're an inclusive business. Yeah. But you have to do it collaboratively together so that then more people can reach you, so that then you're... services and your products are able to reach more people. But again, it has to be done from the heart. It can't be done any other way.
Thank you. So let's talk about your recent media and public speaking. So you've been featured in various media outlets, like In My Skin and in other major publications. So how has that media visibility impacted your work? Advocacy.
Well, so I absolutely hated the media for all reasons. I hated the media because of how they portray people, you know, what sort of message that they can put out there. And I started working with PR team, and the first one that I did was like Business Up North or something like that. And I had like this little feature piece in there, and it didn't really make much of a noise. And then I went on and did a feature piece in Pink News, which is one of the biggest LGBT digital media newspapers. And from that, that started generating so many more conversations for people. And like, for instance, like on social media, people would reach out, people would reshare the post, people would comment on the post. And the visibility for me was great. Like, you know, but it was still this fear factor of what happens when a troll turns up, or what happens, you know, when somebody turns up and isn't great. And it's having this, emotional resilience of knowing that what I'm putting out to the world, people need to hear. And it's this strength of self of going, well, ignore the trolls, because it's like me having the resilience of not reading the comments, because that was the biggest thing someone told me, like, don't read the comments, don't get involved with the comments. And that was the resilience for me of like ignoring that, so then it wouldn't affect like my, like the feeling of my worth or whatever. And then when I went on and did, I did the Metro, which again was another feature piece. And then that was then lent into the Channel 4 visibility. Now the Channel 4 stuff was absolutely unbelievable. I cannot express the care and attention that I got from the Channel 4 team. They were absolutely unbelievable. They were so sensitive. They were so validating. They were just they were so compassionate. It was beautiful. And the ripple effect that that has made now is it's opened up conversations within like the media spaces around talking about transition journeys, because that's what it was about. It was around, it was trans visibility, but it was around different transitioning journeys and where people were within their transition journeys, because transition journeys different. Like there is not a one fits all. Like every transition journey is different. And that was so beautifully captured. But that has created visibility for me in other spaces, you know, being able to link up with more people that are, you know, quite visible within the LGBT world, you know, link up quite higher within like LGBT charities and other spaces and stuff, which has been brilliant. And it's also just generated that conversation around, you know, how we capture this better. And how we capture this and how we start to show real diversity and celebrate diversity within, on social media or on the television, for example, or on podcasts or record, you know, all that sort of stuff. But yeah, it's given me that sense of, you know, Well, I would say validation within that visibility, but also within that visibility has come negative impacts and discrimination and transphobia and homophobia and all that sort of stuff. But like I say, it's the resilience of knowing that what I am talking about is so desperately needed in the spaces that we take up.
Absolutely.
So I have to kind of be blinkered. When something goes out, I have to like put these blinkers on and just ignore it.
And I was going to say, how do you manage that in your own emotional resilience? Because, yes, you've got to be strong and powerful as a business owner. But then there's that person behind it.
Yeah, it takes... I mean, when the Channel 4 stuff came out, it got very loud. Like, it was very, very loud, like, in my corner, like, on social media, in my messages, like, got really, really loud. And it got quite loud, like, on the Channel 4 platforms as well. And that was a bit overwhelming for me because I'd never experienced that. And it was very overwhelming. And I was like, how do people manage this on a day-to-day basis? And when I started to... you know, see people sharing it and like, you know, the likes were going up and you saw really good, nice comments. But then once that started to filter in, the negative things started to filter in and then the trolls started to come out of the woodwork. And for me personally, it was just like an overwhelming sensation of so many mixed emotions and so many mixed feelings. And the hate that people put out there is like, it like really took me back. I didn't really know what to do with it. And it shocked me really. And I stand very strong in myself now because it's taken me a long time to get there. Like, I know like I'm 28 and but it took me 13, 14 years to be able to find myself. Mm. And I very much hold myself in that space now. I'm very strong in that sense of knowing. But you know, when you start, when you can kind of go, oh, I'm going to ignore that. Oh, like read that being ridiculous. But then when, you know, 10 or 13 comments start to come, it does start to impact you. And it does start to think, well, oh my goodness, like, why is there so much hate in the world? And then you really start to get in your own brain and think, oh my goodness, there's so much hate. There's so much, you know, blah, blah, blah. But it like I say, for me, it just was a real, it was a real strength. It was a real strength of visibility. But I would say, you know, if anybody's listening that is getting involved with the media, just prepare yourself to shut everything off and just let it do its job. You know, shut it off, let it do its job, but also enjoy it. Also enjoy the work that you've created, the words that you've put on paper or the picture that you've put on paper or whatever. Just enjoy it. Yeah, just sit in that and really, yeah, and enjoy it, basically.
Because it can quite, and that's the thing about being a member of the LGBT community, it when someone's having a go at you online or something, it's a very personal thing, isn't it?
Because
they're attacking what makes you you.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can't, you know, have they actually considered that? I don't know. You know,
it takes its toll because it is a part of you. Like being part of a marginalized community, like your like almost protected characteristic, if we're going to call it that, like that is a big element of who we are and it's a big part of our identity. And it shouldn't be, but it is. Like you don't go into, you know, you don't come out as being straight. Or you don't have to tell somebody, oh, you know, I'm black or I'm Hispanic or I'm Muslim. Like all of those things, all of those protected characteristics, we shouldn't have to tell people that that is a part of us. But, or, you know, we shouldn't have to tell people, oh, I'm trans or I'm gay or I'm a lesbian or whatever. But, you know, society makes it like we have to do that.
Yeah.
And then what happens then within that is that somebody then creates a set, like almost create and paints this picture of who we are. And when like when you're so right, like the echo chamber that is around the LGBT community at the moment, especially around the trans community, that we have to fight to be seen and we have to fight for our right to be visible.
Yeah.
And it's and it is like this absolute like attack on the soul because it's like this feeling of like, well, why am I any different from that straight woman or that straight person over there, for example? I'm not any different. You know, I just love who I love and they love who they love, and that's just how it should be, right? And it is, it's like this deeply, like, soulful, like hit, like big punch to the chest, because it is so embedded into who we are. And because of this echo chamber and because of this need to differentiate and to put people in boxes, we have to protect that even more. We have to look after that bit of ourselves even more.
So you call it an echo chamber. So where do you think that has come from? And you said particularly around trans at the moment, and I've seen it. You know, people are saying that you can't talk about that kind of thing in schools because it's not right for school children. Where do you think that? And I have noticed it increase. It's like that ball that's rolling down the hill. Getting momentum. Where do you think that come from?
I would say it's always under. So if we go back to, say, the 60s, the LGBT community were the scapegoats. Everybody that was LGBT was the problem. They were an issue, they were a debate, they were a question, right? And then we look at the AIDS pandemic. It's gay men, right? And we go, it's almost like now we're going full circle, because we can't just blame the LGBT community anymore, because there is so much more acceptance around sexuality, you know? Where it's now becoming the full circle of gender identity. And it's like we're almost like going back in time, because unfortunately our society needs a scapegoat. It needs almost like a problem, and it needs to have a face of that problem. So what's basically happening now is, like, with the trans community, it's like, well, the trans community are the problem. You know, this idolization of we're trying to push this onto young kids, or we're trying to push the idea around, you know, having gender affirming care. We're trying to push this on young adults, or, well, we're unsafe to be in the toilets, or we're unsafe to access healthcare on the NHS, and it's all about finding this scapegoat and this problem. And it's not a problem. It's not an issue. It's not a debate. It's just about this. There needs to be fear. And unfortunately, the media creates the fear. And it creates the fear because they need to have a reason or an excuse for the problem.
Yeah.
And at the moment, unfortunately, the trans community are becoming a main topic of conversation, because they need to have a problem over here that people will agree with. So all the other bits and pieces that they're messing up goes under the back burner.
Absolutely.
It's like they're talking about trans people, like, well, trans people can't use the toilet. Well, what about maybe sorting out the NHS waiting lists? Is that not a priority for you?
Yeah.
No, we're going to focus on, like, taking rights away from trans people. And it's like this battle of, well, we need something to focus on. And because the fear has been instilled into so many people, that now it has become a problem. The trans community isn't a problem, but it's become a problem. Do you know what I mean?
Do you think there are also people out there on social media, for instance, who are not doing trans people a favour? I mean, I was on a social media platform, TikTok, I think it was. And there was a woman on there, I think, and she was saying, well, they were a lesbian, non-binary, transgender mermaid.
Right.
And I just thought, that, how, the mermaid bit threw me, to be fair.
Yeah.
And I just thought, when we've got people that are doing that, that's, surely that's not helping.
Mm.
The trans community, Or am I wrong in...
No, and like you, it's a very valid thing to say because, you know, and that there is something that people would fear to say. So I champion you and thank you for bringing that flight forward. The thing is with self-identity and self-expression is when some people do it to take the mic. And yeah. Some people do it. So, for example, you know, like, well, if they're identifying as non-binary, then I'm going to identify as a chair. And, yeah. You know, like things like that where people take the mic and people take, you know, basically will take, well, yeah, take the mic out of the trans community and will make a mockery of the trans community. And that's when people start to find it as a joke, right? Yeah. Whereas, like with other people, their self identity and their gender expression is completely different. So, for example, I might identify as being trans, but I might enjoy dressing up like a dinosaur. That's right. Just my gender expression, right? That yeah. I just might want to look like a dinosaur, right? Yeah. But it doesn't take anything away from my gender identity, which in how we present ourselves to the world is how we present ourselves to the world.
Yeah.
Like I would say that I wear quite masculine clothing.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say that I have, you know, kind of like a neutral style haircut, for example, because it's quite long on top and short on the side. That is my gender expression.
Yeah.
But if, say, for instance, somebody that was to walk in or somebody that was to come and be in our spaces, who was like, you know, I really enjoy dressing up like, I don't know, I really enjoy dressing up like superheroes. Oh, right. Yeah. Okay, then. Amazing. That is part of their gender expression.
Okay.
You know, does that make sense?
Kind of.
Sort of.
Yeah.
Like, and it's hard to explain. Like, well, we could literally talk about this, and I it's so difficult not to get into it because our identity is made up of so many different elements. So many different elements. We've got our gender identity, which is our sense of self within our body, within our mind, right? We've got our sexuality, which is who we love, you know? Yeah. What love we want to receive, you know, what is our attraction to other human beings? We've got our gender expression. Our gender expression is between like the masculine, feminine and neutral spaces. And that comes in the clothes that we wear, the hairstyle that we have, the tone of voice that we use, the way that we hold ourselves in different spaces, you know, and we've got our sex characteristics, and our sex characteristics is what our body's makeup is, the bits that we have no control over, you know, our hormones, our chromosomes, our secondary sort of stuff, like we have no control over that, right? And then we've got our assignment at birth. Like there is so many elements that make up us as a human being. And this is where people get lost in thinking, well, no, you've got your sexuality and you've got your gender and that is it, right? And your gender has to be binary. It has to be man or woman. And your sexuality can't go anything. You have to be attracted to men, you have to be attracted to women, or you're attracted to both. And that's it, right? And that, what, 30, 40, 50 years ago was, that's where we were at. Yeah. Whereas like now we've got more research. There's more studies that have come forward. Like there are studies about like a trans person's brain being completely different to, say, somebody else's brain. And when they're talking about the scientific elements of that, it shows that the neuro, like, I'm not very sciencey, so I might not get the words right, but like the neuro pathways are rooted differently to how the body has been birthed.
Oh, okay.
So it shows in somebody's brain that the neural pathways are different. There is this disconnect in the brain between the body that has come out and the brain what the brain is saying that is different. And that's what we call gender dysphoria. And that is where this disconnect of gender dysphoria comes from. Does that make sense?
Sort of. Thanks so much for explaining that.
That's all right.
And I think that is a case of there hasn't been that explanation. I mean, I'm 50 odd, and it's kind of like, I was brought up as male, female.
Yeah.
Gay, straight, that's it.
Yeah.
And just plod on kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, coming into society today when things are changing. And I actually think it's good that things are changing, because I don't think we should be put in boxes.
No.
We started off this podcast where you were saying, let's just be our authentic selves.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I think we should be allowed. It's not even a case of allowed, is it? We should just be.
Yeah, you should just be. Yeah, that's
it. It's not a case of being allowed.
Yeah, yeah.
We're not going to get chucked into prison for it.
Yeah, yeah.
Who knows nowadays?
But it should just be you, and it is this permission to just be who you are. Like, there are so many people that I have met on my journey where they have been made to feel like they are less than for being who they are. And it takes such a strength to step out into the light and out of a lineup of like everything being very samey and everything being very conditioned and everything being very gender normed. It takes a lot of strength for somebody to step out of that lineup and go, actually, no, I don't fit that. I don't want to do that. That doesn't make sense to me. Like, my 11-year-old is gender fluid. And gender fluid is this transition, or not transition, sorry, this fluctuation between what we would say the traditional genders, which be male and female. And some days they will get up out of bed and they're like, I want to put my tutu on and I want to put my makeup on. They were assigned male at birth. I want to put my makeup on, I want to do my hair and all that sort of stuff. And then the following day, they might wake up and be more, you know, I feel like I just want to put some joggers on today. I feel like I just want to, you know, put a big hoodie on and play on my laptop, you know, eat, like, he's very much into gaming. And he is 11 years old. And the worst thing that I could do as a parent is tell him, no, you are a boy and you must fit into this category. Because what effect that has on him is his mental health.
Absolutely.
You know, their mental health to me is the biggest priority. I couldn't care what they got in GCSEs. I couldn't care what they got, you know, if they decided that they didn't want to ride a bike, if they wanted to, you know, go swimming, I couldn't care less.
Yeah.
As long as they are happy within their soul, within their mind, that's all that matters to me. And giving them permission to do that is like this, it's this bigger, it's this like almost this sense of absolute complete validation.
Absolutely.
For who they are. And I wouldn't change that.
Yeah, that's hugely important, and you know, I congratulate you in just doing that, because as a child who, I was at senior school, I knew I was gay.
Yeah.
My parents were so homophobic.
Yeah.
Absolutely couldn't come out as gay. I didn't come out until I was 30, by which point I'd been married, I'd got a son. Had gone through awful domestic abuse in my relationship or in my marriage, and pretty much got blackmailed into coming out.
Yeah.
Who wants their children to go through that?
I know.
You just want them to have, you know, that was probably 15 years of my life where it wasn't me.
Yeah. Though, and like my parents, like me and my parents, so my parents are still together, happily married, still together, and they have a sister and they have a nephew. And that's like our family. Like our family is very, very small.
Yeah.
And our journey has been like a roller coaster. Because I came out as being gay when I was like 13 or 14.
Yeah.
And at that time, my mum was like, it's a phase, you'll get over it. And the more like the more conversations that we have now as me as an adult, their fear of what I was going to face, not being straight, was why they said to me that it was a phase. Why they kept telling me all of the negatives about being gay, because they wanted to try and change my opinion to protect me. And that And in itself, it's like, oh my goodness, that sounds ridiculous. But it actually isn't ridiculous. It's so valid because our parents actually, or parents in ourselves, want to protect our children, but sometimes we do it in all the wrong ways. And, you know, I'm a parent, like I've got two little humans, like they're not mine biologically, but they are mine. And I think to myself when they want to do stuff or they want to go somewhere, I'm like, oh my goodness, no. And then you try and come up with all these mad excuses of why. And you just think, why am I trying to prevent this? Because if I prevent it, they're going to push back and they're going to rebel and then they're going to don't go and do it anyway. So for me, like, and as I kind of continued on my self-discovery journey of, you know, finding my gender identities, being trans, and then going having surgery, going having gender-affirming care, for them, it's been such a journey of acceptance.
Yeah.
And a journey of going, yeah, but you're still my child. And yeah. I am still your child, but I'm so much more happier now than what I was, say, 10 years ago. And that is such a big thing for us. Like, and we don't, and parent, and I completely, we, these little humans that we're given, you know, whether we birth them, whether we adopt them, whether we foster them, whatever we do to become a parent, we want to hold them, we want to nurture them, we want to look after them. And sometimes we hold on too tight. And we hold on too tight because of fear, and we hold on too tight because we don't want any harm to come to these little humans. But sometimes we have to allow that journey. Sometimes we have to get out of our own way and just allow them to go on that journey, because they'll come back to you so much more if you do. And that's something that my parents have learned over the last 10 years, I would say. They've just learned to let go of it a bit better.
Yeah, and I think you're right, aren't you, that we just want our children to be happy.
Yeah.
And we do want to protect them, but then we, you know, the only way we could do that is to have them in our care 24/7 and not have them at all. And they're going to go and learn, and they're going to come across a lot of things that we don't know about.
Yeah.
And it, as you say, again, mental health is just, we, you know, look at mental health at the minute. It's through the roof
with
people are struggling so much. And as you said earlier, the NHS
is
just absolutely, you know, it's not there, it's not providing services.
No.
Let me see. So, so I've got some quick fire questions for you.
Okay, no worries.
Just to wrap things up.
Yeah.
Completely unrelated. So what, this one's off. What's one thing people often get wrong about inclusivity?
That it's really scary. That it's really scary and it's a lot of hard work.
Yeah, and they just need to talk, don't they?
That's it.
So the next one, completely unrelated. If you could have dinner with any influential figure, past or present, who would it be and why?
God, that's so difficult. So one person I would love to go for dinner with is a person called Jamie Windust. They are an author, a public speaker, and a model. And they are one of my favourite authors. And I would love to sit down with them because they are so fabulous. I would love to, because I feel like we'd go to this really, like, cosmopolitan extravaganza place to eat.
Yeah.
And it'd be great. And I'd love to do that.
Wow. And lastly, what's your favourite way to unwind after a busy day?
Spending time with the kids, I guess. And being out in the sun. I like being out in the sun.
Lovely day as well, isn't it?
Oh, I know, it's absolutely gorgeous, yeah.
Sure.
Being out in the sun, yeah.
Alex, have you got anything that you would like to lastly just say to our listeners or you want to put out there?
I think it's just like, you know, you don't have to understand like everybody's like lived experience, but I think it's just about respecting and validating that lived experience. And, you know, if you're on this journey where you're learning about the LGBT community for work, for personal, you know, for your family, for your partners, maybe, like, just give yourself like compassion and like just allow yourself that time and space, because you don't have to know everything right away. You don't have to come away from something and go, right, I'm an absolute expert. It's about just giving yourself that time and space to learn and understand and validate people's lived experiences, because that is the biggest thing that you can give somebody. Yeah, that would probably be my last bit.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoy listening to the episode and learn some tips on how to manage your emotions in a healthy way. If you've been affected by anything in the podcast, or if you want to share your feedback or questions, please email claire@angermanagementcoach.co.uk. Thank you for listening, and do remember, you have the power to calm your emotions and communicate effectively.